Welcome to part two of our interview with Stephen Asher about the haunted St. Vincent Academy.
I wonder, because when you have that many things going on in such a condensed area, and if you don't leave your area all that much, it's the norm. And you almost think, oh, well, you know, every place is like this. Every town has this many things that go on around it. Was that kind of what the attitude was as you dug and you talked to more locals, that maybe they didn't realize just how much of essentially a honeypot the place is of paranormal activity?
Well, yes and no. I mean, there's some that who were kind of in the know, people that would follow like the ghost hunter shows and stuff like that.
Sure.
But then they also knew a lot of times then when people would flock to these areas, and then it's like, look, we're an itty bitty town. We've been doing pretty good. Let's just kind of keep, let's sleep in dogs lie. It's a very popular, I've heard that, man. I thought a quarter for every time I've heard about something I question about, I'd be a rich man. But it's kind of, a lot of it's like that. But, and that was the old guard, but the younger people who have been exposed to, ghost hunting or paranormal investigations or just, seeing movies about this, Insidious and whatnot. It's kind of, in an armchair way, it's kind of cool. It's kind of a claim to fame. There was a place, which is, this is unrelated to the book, but in eastern Kentucky, around a place, an area called Owensville. And I went there because there was I think I may have talked to you before about the Kentucky meat rain.
Okay.
And that was the area where that happened. I think Jack and Ozzy Osbourne visited there and saw like some of the chunks of meat that supposedly fell out of the sky from just nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, dude, why don't you have, whatever, like stew cook off, the Great Kentucky Meat Rain, beef stew cook off or something. Man, I would be amping this up. I would be like, man, that would be my thing. Your city flag should have just like a big chunk of, unidentifiable meat. And they're like, it's happened so long ago and it's become just this sort of almost a quaint little story.
Yeah.
Which I'm like, I'm not sure how blood raining out of the sky on people at a picnic is quaint, but okay. But like you said, it's just like, I grew up listening to like a lot of punk and metal. And okay, do you remember, I'm not sure if you listened to like Metallica back in the day.
I didn't, but I know what you're talking about.
Okay. This could be any band.
Yeah.
You have a band member leave or get fired or whatever. Yeah. And you have the new kid who's never been on tour, and you're going to you go to your hotel and you're like, wow, we get room service. Wow. It's got color TV in here. What? You mean we get to, get these free comps to go here and do this.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow, man. They want me to sign a deal. I'll have my own bass or I'll have my own guitar. My signature stuff. They're like, yeah, man, that's just what you do. But those fresh eyes that come in and go, you don't understand, this is great.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of me. I'm sort of the excitable,
sure.
excitable guy. I've never lost that. But again, luckily I didn't come in there, trying to flex on anybody and look cool. I didn't come in there, dressed like the Undertaker with a long trench coat and a hat. I was just regular old guy. And talking to these folks just like they're people, because they're not specimens, they're not a chapter. Mm-hmm. They're humans, and I've kept in touch with a lot of these people. And it's that's what it's about, because once you kind of make those connections, I'm not a journalist. I guess I'm a writer, an author and stuff. It's funny, still funny shoes for me. I'm just a an ex-guard that, grew up running around in creeks, catching crawdads and stuff. I'm a very simple country guy, but the way that they welcome you in, because they don't have to do that.
Sure.
People feel entitled. And a lot of times, and like, well, why don't you talk about this, And maybe it was a murder of an aunt or a suicide of a grandparent. I'm going, oh, it just cringes me because it makes everyone else who does this look cold.
Yeah.
And nutsy and opportunistic, and I wouldn't blame them for not talking to them either.
I mean, these are real people's lives. This is what goes on around them. These are their families, these are their friends. So I mean, when you're talking about these things and asking about it, chances are there's somewhat of a personal connection there, or very personal connection there, depending on who you end up having the conversation with. When you were there and when you were talking to the folks of the area, did you get to go into the remnants of St. Vincent? I know you said that there was something very, you know, dark about it, or there have been stories about that. Did you yourself have any experiences while investigating there that just, you know, you too felt that presence?
As of St. Vincent's, when I was there, it was more or less like a quick kind of a stopover, taking photos.
Okay.
It was middle of the day. It was almost like, and I don't mean to minimalize it, it was almost like if you're doing a mini series and you're just like, hey, I need some B-roll.
Sure.
You know, because so much of it was dilapidated, but there was still some of the structure, and it definitely felt like if you visited a Civil War battle site or a graveyard, or if you've ever been somewhere where there's been a lot of death and just not even so much that was necessarily all negative, mm-hmm. but you definitely felt people lived hard lives there, mm-hmm. and you know, sometimes they had hard deaths too, and I've always been kind of sensitive to that. I'm not psychic. I don't really consider myself an empath or nothing like that. I'm not planning on doing a tarot reading for you for $2.99 or anything like that. And I know people that do tarot, God bless them, or whomever bless you, but that's not me. Sure. But I've always trusted my gut. It's pretty much served me really well in prison and law enforcement related things. Why fix it if it ain't broke, right? But
sure.
Definitely felt stuff, but as of anything disembodied, anything whispers behind trees, no. And I don't know, you know, and yeah. That's fine with me.
Sure.
You know, just because I myself didn't have a personal thing there, to me doesn't diminish, you know, 100, 150 years of people. And, you know, when you're talking to people, the proof I needed, at least in regards of their sincerity, is in the eyes.
Sure.
In their body language. It's just, you talk to a person, you can generally kind of tell when they're earnest and at least believes their own story. But you also can tell when they're, how do I say that? A little flaky.
Sure. I mean, and you have, you know, you're talking about all different types of things from legends of the area to, you know, historical fact to, you know, this happened to a friend of mine or this happened to me. Was there anything in the area when you were talking to people about their encounters or the stories, anything that is going on, you know, to this day in active, you know, in an active capacity where people are living in their homes or in their places of work that they're actively dealing with, where it's not just a story of the past, but this is something that is still an ongoing thing for them that they're dealing with on a regular basis?
Right. Well, I mean, there's several.
Sure.
Obviously, there's the property of Higgins.
Yeah.
There's the stuff that people, you know, still report close to the old St. Vincent's.
Mm-hmm.
And there's roads that go not too far from there down into where old homesteads were and where ancient graveyards, when I say ancient, but old graveyards. And people will still see, you know, a form of a faceless man walking down the road who supposedly was in a really bad auto accident, tore his face all up. And people still report that. People still report seeing the children at St. Anne's at the graveyard. The story on this is, and it's such a bizarre story, I don't know what happened, why they're there, if they're kids, what they are. But there's been people that were reporting that they would come. Okay, some people would work at the St. Anne's church, but then, you know, work in the kitchen or do whatever, and then they would come out. And like, say, if you smoke or whatever, you'll go out on a back stoop and walk out close to the little graveyard, which is adjacent to it, to the right. And people would report seeing and hearing kids. Well, you know, it's downtown. Maybe there's kids. But sometimes they would see these forms of these children, but they didn't, how to put it, they didn't look right. There was something off. And some of the kids would be wearing kind of outdated clothing. So you're thinking, oh, like a ghost, right? Okay, that's okay, you know, I can eat that one. But then some of them, their faces was very gaunt, almost like they're malnourished. Okay, I can believe that too. People starved to death. People lived hard lives. And some of them had almost, not conant head, how do I describe it? Have you ever seen anybody with hydrocephalus?
I don't know if I have or not.
Okay, well, it's commonly known, especially back in the old days, as like waterhead.
Okay, sure.
The head's kind of expanded. Kind of, I don't want to say fat. I'm not making any sort of joke or anything. We had a son that had hydrocephalus, so okay. I know what that looks like.
Sure.
But it looks somewhat alien.
Okay.
Because of the, depending on how soon they catch it and how they treat it. And they would see these kids with very high foreheads, which also looks a little alien-y too. Their eyes were kind of offset. Think along the lines of like visually, like the eyes of like something from 30 Days a Night. Their eyes were offset and their mouths were filled with rows of these jagged corkscrew type teeth. Like you ever seen a periwinkle in the water? It looks almost like a little cone or like a unicorn's horn. Like you find them in the river. I don't know if you have them up there.
Sure.
But like that, but they had rows of them in their mouths and they were just really super freaking creepy. And, they didn't do anything to, the lady that saw it. They studied there and they kind of come up and kind of almost like they're going to mess with her, and then they kind of fade back. Then that happened a couple of times. I spoke to people. Nobody knows what that's about. Because I was thinking, oh, maybe was there a circus or some, maybe there's some children with really bad malformations and what do you call it? Birth defects or something. You know,
mm-hmm.
A lot of stuff can be explained, you know, through something like that. And they're like, no, as far as we know, not. Very rarely seen, but yeah. They still do see them. And I have no, explanation for it. It's just a really bizarre story, and I don't want to see them.
No,
not at all. And so again, it's of a really weird area, which there's a lot of convergence of water. If you believe in, you know, the energy of water and whatnot, and it may very well be a ley line in that area. And there's a lot of people who settled. You know, there's a lot of, you know, Welsh and Scottish and things. So they have a lot of things that come from folklore and a lot of things that I think carried over. You know, some people believe if you have a banshee or something, it follows the family. It's generational. It just comes with you. Maybe it's something connected to something not even from, you know, this country. So, but I included it because, A, it's such a bizarre story. It's memorable. And it was, to me, it was entertaining to write. And I actually even did some artwork on it, and it looks super creepy. So, again, you know, my main thing is not to go, well, hey, look, you know, I'm such a great ghost hunter, and I'm, look at me, I'm deep and whatever. But it's like, you look at the stories, almost like a, what was the things, just the facts, ma'am.
Mm-hmm.
Here, this is what I was given. I cleaned it up, and you take it, you make your judgment. And what's great is when people have discussions about it. And they'll go, oh, well, maybe it was this, or I feel maybe this, you know, it was tied into this. Some people even said maybe it was some children that were interbred with the harps because there was a lot of interbreeding. Yay, Kentucky, right?
Mm-hmm.
No good. I hate that. Stereotypes suck. But anyway, children that were interbred and were born with devastating birth defects. So, again, possible. I don't know. And maybe they were buried off off property.
Sure.
Because maybe I guarantee they weren't baptized, but for whatever reason, they're wanting to be there. Maybe that's their attempt to, you know, maybe they're not malevolent. Maybe they're looking for a way home.
Yeah.
And that's the sort of stuff that kind of hits me from the side. I'm like, I never thought about it. And then I'm sad, but it's still a very interesting way of looking at it. And that's the greatest part of it is writing these books is people coming with, you know, what ifs and maybe, and then you get X amount of people together. And sometimes you kind of narrow it down pretty close to what you think is going on.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the best part of it. The storytelling and the interaction and the, as we say here in the South, fellowship, you know, sitting there and talking back and forth across the table with a cup of coffee. And, you know, sometimes people kind of, it's, you know, not always laughing, but sometimes, you know, you can see humor in dark things. And then sometimes people, you know, you can tell their eyes are big as dinner plates remembering it. And some people, I have to stop because I get emotional, and it's real life. It's and that's the thing. It talks about the people just as much as the spirits or
sure.
whatever is there. Because if you don't take that part of the equation, I think you're just really giving us really superficial jump scare kind of thing, and I don't want to write that.
Sure. When you, if you were to walk into a coffee shop there in town and just sit down, have a cup of coffee, talk to a stranger, and you were to bring up some of these things, some of these stories, is this a town where it would be pretty common that almost anyone would be able to join in that conversation and have an opinion and not write off, oh, that's a bunch of rumors, it's a bunch of malarkey, that's a bunch of whatever? Is this, because it sounds like there's just so much that goes on here, is it just kind of a common accepted fact of life that there are ghosts and there's a lot of them here?
Well, it's a thing of, again, I talk in media references, you know, I mean, television helped raise me as a kid. So, but, you know, if you remember like the old Blair Witch thing, you know, some people's like, oh, yeah, I seen it. One goes, ah, it's BS. Y'all are crazy. You know, you got some of that. But for the most part, I didn't do a whole lot of just completely cold introductions with people because, you know, I don't like getting cussed out or called a Satanist or something crazy.
Sure.
Generally, again, I know a friend who's a friend of a friend, and you have a little bit softer meeting, and once I know it's okay, then we sit down.
Okay.
Because that's like I said, three or four counties away from me, and if I ran up trying to talk to every person like that, it would be almost impossible. Thank God for the internet. Thank God for message boards. Thank God for historical boards. Thank God for, because I made a lot of contacts that way.
Sure.
And through my contacts from the penitentiary and worked who and people who worked there. It, like I said, and it took a while because, again, I knew very little people there. Mm-hmm. And I was so, how do I put this? Hesitant, just like I am right now trying to explain it. I was very hesitant because I didn't want to be disrespectful. I didn't want people to think I'm trying to, you know, just make money on, their hardships, and I didn't want to be sacrilegious or disrespectful because, you know, doesn't mean you do it on purpose, but sometimes you just bring it a certain way. And it's like, you should have probably brought that different.
Sure.
So I was very, very careful. There are some people that you're in the conversation and they would kind of go, well, yeah, I remember my grandpa told me about this, or, or somebody's like, oh, I had an aunt who worked down at whatever facility, or she was part of the cleanup team for the old Slack Farm thing, you know, because FBI was involved in that. It was big. So then you have, oh, well, okay, he seems okay, they're vouching for him. Then people would talk. I mean, it really, really took a lot. And, but thank goodness and that people did open up and want to share their stories. And once they knew you weren't going to do all that, they, they started, I wouldn't say grows or droves because there's not that many people, but I did start getting a lot of stories, yeah.
I bet it was somewhat cathartic for some folks just to be able to talk about it in kind of an open way and not have to hold back some of these stories without, you know, someone coming in from the outside, if they were to say some of these things. I'm sure there's a lot of fear of just being looked at as like, oh, you're crazy, whatever. It's some small town, they're crazy people. But, you know, you're going in not with that attitude. You're going in wanting to hear the stories. And that's probably a very important thing.
Well, the thing for me is, because like I said, my day job, I teach life skills for special needs adults. And when I say this, I'm not like toot-toot, but this is a little bit of my background. We advocate for Special Olympics and special needs research and epilepsy research. And so we're very mindful of people and in situations that are not of their own choosing. And thing is, you got to remember, this is like book three of four of the Hauntings of series. So by now, some people have read my book, you know,
sure.
Hopefully. So, and then people can kind of go to my website, which if it's okay, I'm going to throw that out.
Yeah.
It's Steve E. Asher. It's all lowercase and together. So it's like writing the name Steve with two E's and then Asher.com. And so I had that up so people can reference the books. They can reference, it's got pictures from where we do investigations. It's got some of my my own podcast, The House of Asher. Hello, it's okay to throw that out.
Yeah.
And just whatever, and contact me, that kind of thing. And I've always welcomed people to do that. But So they have a little bit of, because the first thing I do, like if I contact somebody about doing an investigation or to do a signing, and I'll go, yeah, my name's Steve Asher. And you know, before I can even say, so would you like a website? So actually, just, you know, I just Googled you. You know, that's the thing. It's the modern deal. Boom. I Googled you. Okay, well, you see Stevie Asher. That's my page. Check it out. It tells you all about it. But luckily for me that I've put in enough time and enough legwork and enough trying to be pretty transparent about what I do that people kind of get it. And, you know, they may have heard me on different radio shows. They may have, you know, seen me on some local news stuff and newspapers and whatnot. Enough that it's not like I'm just some drifter cat blowing in from, and understand this is the South. And so it's like, you know, well, here comes this New York fella. I don't know why they talk like Hank Hill. Well, here comes that New York fella thinking he's going to make $1 million on this. And they still use terms like carpetbagger here.
Okay. Yeah.
That's still, and I'm like, my God, Civil War is how long ago?
No.
But you have that, you're very, very circle your wagons. You don't know what an outlander, as it would be, to quote Children of the Corn, you just don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, jokingly, but, you know, once you kind of get the cut of a guy's jib and how he, I don't know what a jib is, but it's a thing, and they want to know the cut of it. So they get to know that and know that you're not a complete piece of whatever, and
sure,
you're a family guy, and you do a lot with, you know, churches and do stuff with Special Olympics. It's not, it's sort of like, he's just sort of a normal guy, but he really writes weird stuff.
Yeah.
And that's overwhelmingly how it is. It's like, yeah, you're kind of a normal guy. I said, what did you think? I was sleeping upside down and, you know, got like exactly, nice streaks of white in my hair and not in the cape, you know.
It's got to show them who you are and that you're normal and you're really one of them just from a different city. And you're not there to do anything negative.
You find that we all have experiences.
Yeah.
Someone in your family, someone, a cousin, sister, whatever, has an experience. And, you know, we're all haunted to a point.
Yeah.
And, you know, some people talk about it, some people don't. And I have to write about it.
That wraps up part two of our interview with Stephen Asher about the haunted St. Vincent Academy. Very compelling interview. Be sure to check out his book on the topic. Until next time, for the Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thank you.